Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio KCAW in Sitka, where it is 30 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Today is Tuesday, November 15th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Changes could be on the way to the extra charge utility customers get when the city uses diesel fuel to generate electricity. At its regular meeting tonight, the Sitka Assembly is scheduled to discuss changes to the city's fuel surcharge ordinance. Currently, the surcharge kicks in when the city uses more than $50,000 worth of diesel fuel to make electricity. The amount of the surcharge is determined by taking the amount of diesel over $50,000 in a year and dividing it by the number of kilowatt hours sold to customers over a year. The changes under consideration tonight do two main things. Instead of the fuel surcharge kicking in after $50,000, it would kick in after whatever amount the city budgets for diesel. And instead of determining the surcharge based on annual usage, the city would use quarterly data. Also on the agenda tonight, how to spend money the city receives from a tax on cruise passengers. There are 10 proposals on the table tonight, including funding for a renovation to the Sitka Historical Society and Museum, improvements to walkways at the Lake and Lincoln Street intersection, and interpretive signage for visitors. The Assembly has received recommendations on which to approve from Municipal Administrator Jim Dinley. Tonight's meeting is where members will decide which, if any, to fund. The meeting begins at 6 p.m. tonight inside Harrigan Centennial Hall. KCAW will provide live coverage. A small but powerful storm slammed broadside into Sitka over the weekend. On land, the city fared well, but in Eliason Harbor, boat owners scrambled to save their vessels as floats rocked, lines snapped, and fenders popped. Most boats came away with broken bowsprits or torn cleats, and one boat, the Dancing Girl, sank. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Port Alexander resident Harmony Garnick bought the Dancing Girl just 3 weeks ago. It was tied to the transient floats at Eliason Harbor on Saturday afternoon, and she was on her way to check on it. But by the time she got down there, the storm was already doing its damage.
I picked the boat up and set it on the side of the dock some, and the next waves just came in the boat.
Garnick says her boyfriend was aboard at the time and called her to tell her what was happening.
I had my 2-year-old kid in the car, so I had to sit in the parking lot until somebody came to sit with her before I could go down to the dock because it was blowing 60.
The National Weather Service says peak wind in Sitka reached 63 miles per hour on Saturday. Down near the Cape Decision Lighthouse, peak winds hit 99 miles per hour. And out at the Cape Edgecombe Data Buoy, wave heights topped out at 38 feet. Tom Ainsworth is the meteorologist in charge at the Weather Service's Juneau office. Storms like this are not unusual for November, he says, but this one is noteworthy because it was small and it came straight out of the west.
So it gathered a lot of speed as it came across the open Gulf, and most of the energy of this storm was felt right around Sitka, Sitka South, down to about Cape Decision, with wind speeds between 60 and over 90 miles an hour in that area.
I'm down at Eliason Harbor where the wind has picked up again on this Monday afternoon. You can hear it whistling through some of the rigging. And there's a seagull, several of them actually, flapping their wings pretty hard and not going anywhere. They're just kind of hovering. This wind is only a fraction of what the people who live down here experienced on Saturday afternoon.
It went from, a fairly decent westerly to completely out of control within minutes.
Brian Bach is one of those boat owners. His 24-foot boat, the Viviana, spent the day pitching around and suffered minor damage, including a broken cleat.
All of a sudden, it was a life or death situation for a lot of these guys. The Dancing Girl sunk at the end. I was fighting for my boat, and there were dozens of people that showed up with buoys. You know, my neighbor, Mike Mattingly, was right there with bags. Dave, all kinds of folks were on scene helping out. It was quite a show of just good being good neighbors and kind folks.
Video taken by a boat owner in Eliason Harbor shows floats and boats rocking and heaving back and forth as waves pound the harbor. In addition to those tied to the floats, harbor residents reported several boats dragged anchor during the storm. Harbor Department officials spent Monday dealing with the aftermath and could not immediately be reached for a comprehensive total of the damage. Meanwhile, at the end of the transient float, only the dancing girl's trolling poles are above the surface of the water. It's actually sitting a little higher now after divers spent Monday salvaging cannonballs and other items from the vessel. But Garnick says the real recovery work is still ahead.
Just refloat it, get all the electronics replaced, the engine flushed and running, and try again, I guess. Have to take it home. Have to get there someday.
All right. Refloating of the vessel could happen on Tuesday. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
You can see the video from Eliason Harbor taken during the storm on our website, kcaw.org. A Western conservation group wants endangered species protection for flying squirrels on southeast Alaska's Prince of Wales Island. The group says logging on Tongass National Forest land is a threat to the animals' survival. Joe Vicnicki reports.
Wild Earth Guardians offices are in Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico, but the group has focused one of its latest efforts on flying squirrels in southeast Alaska. The group is petitioning the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list the population on Prince of Wales Island as endangered or threatened. Guardians Wildlife Program Director Mark Salvo says the small mammal is one of the most imperiled in the region.
Our purpose and our goal is to protect all imperiled species in the western United States. This is a species that is threatened by current and future land uses. An endangered listing under the Endangered Species Act would help to direct and guide management of its habitat to ensure that the flying squirrel persists in the future.
The Prince of Wales population is a subspecies of the northern flying squirrel, and it has also been found on smaller islands around Prince of Wales. The creatures are nocturnal, and they feed on truffles and blueberries. They move through the forest by gliding from the top of trees up to 250 feet in one jump. Salvo says logging is a threat to the animal's habitat.
The latest planning documents leave much of the islands open to logging, setting aside only some small old-growth reserves of mostly low-volume, isolated forested areas. So this leads us to believe that this sensitive species, already identified by science as imperiled, will become further endangered by logging in the near future.
The group is also highlighting logging that's occurred at two narrow points of the island at Neck Lake and Sulcer Portage, and says large open spaces make it difficult for the squirrels to move safely between areas of old-growth forest, their primary habitat. Scientists have studied squirrel numbers on portions of the island, but don't have an overall population estimate or know about population trends. The U.S. Forest Service's Brian Logan, a forest wildlife biologist on the Tongass, says it's difficult to count squirrel numbers.
What we typically do in situations where we have a species that's hard to sample like that, we will sample limited areas and then extrapolate from that. And we haven't actually done that specifically for Prince of Wales flying squirrel. We have ongoing studies that look at the response of the understory in previously harvested timber stands. And in as part of that, we are counting squirrels and looking at the response of some of their foraging substrates like truffles.
And Logan says the Forest Service's conservation strategy for the Tongass protects habitat for squirrels and other wildlife. That strategy centers around a network of reserves of old-growth forest, along with standards for development that is permitted on other land.
The design of the conservation strategy, as part of that design, we looked at, is it capable of maintaining viable populations across the forest? And Prince of Wales flying squirrels is one of those species that we've considered. So we do monitor the conservation strategy and its effectiveness, and at this point in time, we feel it's a valid strategy, and we're confident in the protections that it affords all species across the Tongass, including Prince of Wales flying squirrel.
Forest Service surveys on Prince of Wales Island and Mitkoff Island have found some of the highest flying squirrel densities in North America. The agency's research shows the importance of upland old-growth forests to the animals, but also suggests the squirrels can survive and breed in mixed forest around muskegs. More recent research has looked at the animal's habitat and diet. The State of Alaska's Endangered Species Act coordinator Doug Vincent Lang says the state has no specific concerns about the viability of flying squirrels at this time. And Chris Mache, a state forester, says the Forest Service's management plan for the Tongass has adequate protections to ensure both a viable timber industry and wildlife populations. The Wild Earth Guardians petition could lead to a status review for the animals. Bruce Woods, a spokesman for the Fish and Wildlife Service, says the next step will be analyzing the petition and determining if it includes enough information for a government review.
Before we can do that, though, we've got to have funding allocated to take that step, because we're not legally allowed to do anything that we don't have funding approved for. We are in the process of talking to our headquarters in Washington about funding for our listing program, and when and if the funds are allocated, we will begin to analyze the petition.
The petition review process, if it is funded, can take a couple of years. Fish and Wildlife this summer also received a petition to list the Alexander Archipelago wolf. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicky.
Alaska's Attorney General says Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell did not misuse his office in endorsing Mitt Romney for president. The opinion by Attorney General John Burns is in response to activist Andre McLeod. She questioned whether Treadwell misused his position for partisan political activity in endorsing Romney last month. Burns, in a letter shared by McLeod yesterday, said it's his understanding that Treadwell, acting in his personal capacity, contacted Romney's campaign by email using his personal home account. The campaign later issued the news release announcing his endorsement. Burns said the Ethics Act doesn't bar the lieutenant governor either from identifying himself by his elected position or talking about Alaska-related matters in partisan situations. McLeod said Treadwell's title belongs to the people of Alaska and should represent the public interest. Sun weather forecast today for Sitka, PA, calls for mostly cloudy skies, chance of rain and snow showers, highs around 40, southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. This is Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.